Support for the Exchange Podcast from NHPR comes from you, our listeners,
and from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, filling in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It is the day before Thanksgiving, and if you are hosting the family dinner, time is running out for you to run to the grocery store and get that last thing or things you need. Fortunately, these days there are lots of grocery stores to choose from in New Hampshire. Supermarkets, co-ops, small specialty shops, and wholesale clubs abound to accommodate your needs and your preferences. Today on the program, grocery stores, how we choose which ones to shop at, how we do or don't develop grocery store loyalty, and where is technology taking them? Here with me to discuss this are Kasum Alawadi, professor of marketing at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College, and John Dumay, president and CEO of the New Hampshire Grocers Association. Welcome to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, the number for you to call is 1-800-892-6477. Tell us your grocery store story, your preferences. We want to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. You can also send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or post on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. We've got a lot of questions and comments from folks already. We're going to get to them in this hour, but if you'd like to add yours, do it now. But right now, we're going to talk about the historical angle a little bit, because grocery stores have changed a lot in the last 100 years or so. Before we had these ubiquitous supermarkets, we had specialty shops, the butcher, fishmonger, etc. John, what would you say the New Hampshire food experience, food shopping experience was like back in the day, maybe 100 years ago?
Sure. Well, it was more ethnic stores. Immigrants were coming to America around the turn of the century, 1900s. And like my grandfather, came to the States and found that the communities, that their population would sit closer together because they didn't speak the language or know the customs as well. So they'd take an area of town and they'd count that as their own ethnic group. And then within that, they'd say, well, now we don't have any services. We get the products we want, the foods we want, the way we cook in the old country. And so they would start developing individual ethnic grocery stores for the population of that area. And that lasted up until the 1950s easily.
Mm-hmm. And what happened in the 1950s that sort of made them start to disappear?
1950s, it started changing a little bit. They found that there were more integration to other parts of the community. Other parts of the community were coming into the ethnic area. And so they had to broaden their horizon of what they did. So they became more community stores rather than neighborhood stores at that point.
Mm-hmm. And so you had a personal experience with this, right, John?
I've got a long history with that.
Well, tell us a little bit about your personal history. Okay. Your family had a store in Franklin, right?
Well, before that, I grew up in Laconia. And in Laconia, my uncle had a grocery store on Pine Hill called Dumas IGA. And he had that for a few years, where my father started working with his brother in there. He passed away and the store closed. Ironically, my mother's family lived in Franklin and had a Polish grocery store. And so we moved over there and we were part of that. As I mentioned, he came over as an immigrant from Poland in the early 1900s. And didn't know what to do, but saw a grocery store and opened a grocery store in Lowell, Massachusetts. He had that one. He had one across the street. The other one couldn't compete, and he had two stores. Then he sold that after a few years to come to Franklin, where there was another Polish community, and developed the first Polish grocery store on Bow Street.
Mm-hmm. And here we are now, right, with we still have some of those ethnicity-based stores, but we also have these grocery stores that accommodate those needs under one roof, all of those
exactly.
Needs under one roof. Kasum, in your research, what have you learned about how Americans in general shop for food now?
So we talk in research about something called the wheel of retailing. You know, start small, start differentiated, but then the pressures of having to make money lead you to sort of expand, build scale, lower costs, and then you end up with these large, big chains. But then the wheel of retailing keeps turning and consumers still want something different. They don't want everything to look the same wherever they shop. And so we are back to retailers then again trying to differentiate. So consumers shop for different purposes. They shop in the large, low-price places for their staples, but they have their favorites. They have their favorites to go, and I'll just use myself as an anecdote. We don't have a Trader Joe's around here. The closest one is in Nashua, and I don't shop there all the time, but every 5 or 6 weeks, I go over there, and I buy my favorites, and I come back. I go to Walmart, and I pick up my staples of paper towels and laundry detergent there every couple months or so. But my regular grocery store is Hannaford, which is a mile down the street. So it's a combination of convenience, location, location, location is still really important. Consumers shop more out of habit for their large everyday needs, but then for specifics, they have favorite stores that they go to.
And John, is that what you hear from consumers as well?
That's pretty much it. You start finding that a lot of the larger supermarkets are looking to always find out what the consumer wants, and they will try and tailor that so that they have those needs that you don't have to go elsewhere. But there's always going to be that need to want to. We're more mobile today than we've ever been, and so that's always the challenge for the industry.
Mm-hmm. Kazum, have American preferences changed drastically in the last few years?
I wouldn't say drastically. I know the press talks about things being drastic, but I think there's generally been a gradual but steady and consistent change where people are looking much more towards healthful foods, towards organics, towards naturals. The question, of course, is do they really understand what it means to have natural foods? You know, labels can be put fairly easily to make something appear good when there may not be anything special about it. So, yes, there is definitely a trend away from shelf-stable packaged foods, more towards the fresh, more towards variety. But the challenge is that consumers are also ever more time-pressured, which means they can't really take fresh foods home and spend 2 hours cooking them. Mm-hmm. And so they need the convenience of something that can be put together easily, where they feel that they've done their thing to put food on the table for the family. But they can't afford to give it 2 hours. So it's a combination of convenience and freshness and healthfulness.
I always wonder about, you know, whether people are cooking more or cooking less. And I don't know, I haven't done any personal research on this or seen it, but that seems like it would have an impact on whether people are shopping at grocery stores versus going to restaurants or getting takeout. I mean, the choice, the price of takeout is, it seems to be dropping, at least anecdotally. And I don't know, John, what do you think? Is that having an impact on whether people use grocery stores or not?
Yes, it is. You know, one of the things that have hurt grocery stores in the past is that we don't learn growing up in school to cook like they used to in the old days. And it used to be the wife would stay home and be cooking all day, the meals. And like I said, the time constraints today, two working families, they don't have the time to do that. So the alternate of that is to pay for something a little bit higher price to have it done for them.
Mm-hmm. Is that your experience as well?
Yes, but the price sensitivity hasn't gone down. So people do want that convenience. But as we are finding out with some of these meal kit companies that have started, and you know, Blue Apron, for example, came in with a big bang and is really struggling.
Blue Apron, by the way, for folks who aren't familiar with it, this is this online company, right? That
yes.
Sort of just mails you the stuff you need to put one meal together, is that it?
Yes, pretty. Yeah. All the ingredients for a meal mailed to you, but they're finding that that mail to you business is expensive and consumers have really not been, they've tried it, but not been willing to repeat buy very much. Hmm. And Blue Apron now is trying to put those same meal kits on the grocery store shelves.
So they sell
them through Costco and buy them there. And they're trying to get it in other places too. So you need to balance the convenience with not making it too expensive for the consumer. So that's okay. The challenge.
So about these meal kits, because I've thought a lot about that. I've never tried one of these before. John, I'm wondering what your thoughts on the meal kits are, because I guess on the one hand, they were going directly around the grocery stores, but now apparently they may end up in the grocery store shelves.
Well, they're finding that the grocery stores wanted to be that, center point for everything. So a lot of the stores even have their own chefs within the stores making meal kits from the store. So you can go into a store. If you go into a particular store, you can have a sushi bar. You can have a barbecue bar. You can have pizzas all made up, roasted chickens. And all of those different things are prepared meals already. But the benefit of that is that you don't have any waste, food waste. And that's one thing that the stores and the consumers should always be concerned about is a food waste. So by having the meal kit or having a prepared meal for you, you're not buying a whole cabbage head for a little bit of coleslaw. Mm. You're buying the convenience of having just the portions you need for that. And that was the original attraction to Blue Apron, was the convenience of having everything cut to the proper amount of ingredients that you need for that meal.
Mm-hmm. Is that more or less waste? I mean, are you not buying that whole cabbage, but you're creating more plastic in the way of containing it? Or are you risking taking a tiny bit of a whole head of cabbage and then not having use for the rest of that cabbage, and then it goes bad and then you throw it away?
Well, there's always waste. There's all types of solid waste.
Yeah.
And we're trying to mitigate that in the food store. We're having biodegradable containers now rather than the plastic containers. Getting everything more concise with that. But at home, if you buy too much, a larger quantity, you talked about going to the Costco's and things for your products. If you have too much of the same product, you tend to not use it all and waste it. So we believe that about 40% of all the food taken home by consumers today is put into the trash as spoiled food, which is very unfortunate.
You said what percent?
40%.
That's what I thought you said, 40%.
Yeah. And so we think that that's really unfortunate. And there's ways of doing that, preserving the food longer, freezing it, donating it to a soup kitchen or something. There's other ways to stop from it going into solid waste.
Listeners, we're talking about grocery stores on The Exchange today, and we want to know what you think. We want to hear from you. How many times do you go shopping in a week? Do you go once a week to one store? Do you go several times a week to several stores? Do you love grocery shopping, or do you think it's this chore that you just want to get finished with as soon as possible? Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Now, count me among those people that really likes to grocery shop. Maybe I'm nuts, but I think it's fun. And I enjoy it just because I also like to cook. That's one of the things that I enjoy. And since we talked about meal kits, that's one of those things where it sounds like it just sucks the fun out of grocery. And please comment on this if you feel appropriate. No. But, just to go to a grocery store, pick up a box that has everything you need and just walk out, it takes the fun out of,
Absolutely.
Figuring out if that cabbage is the one you want, or do I want this kind of olive oil, or maybe do I want to do coconut oil for this thing?
Right.
Does it erase some of the fun or some of the experience of going to a grocery store?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. There was a study done just recently that said that 84% of the consumers who go to the grocery store go there because they want to be able to see, touch, smell, and evaluate the foods that are in the store. So that's a big thing. From my own point of view, it's an adventure going in there because there's something new coming in all the time. An average grocery supermarket today has 60,000 different product items in there, but there's an additional 2,000 more products being introduced into the market every year. So every time you go to the store, you're really voting for what you want to have in that store, but the mix keeps changing all the time. And to me, that's like Disneyland.
And how about you, Kuzum?
I was going to say exactly that. The thing is, though, not everybody's like you and me, Peter.
Certainly.
So,
yes.
So there's a lot of variation amongst people. And some people really just hate the grocery shopping and they want to get in there and get out of there as quickly as possible. And there are others for whom at least some of the grocery shopping is a lot of fun. And this actually relates to the whole idea today of online deliveries, online shopping and deliveries, because what that's doing is it's getting people to visit the grocery store less. And that comes along with a whole lot of ramifications for their own exploration of products, as well as for the retailer's ability to sell things that the consumer may not have come in planning on buying, but would explore in the store and buy. So yes, indeed, we've got about on average of 60,000 items in the store today. But the stats on that are that the average loyal consumer to a store only buys at most 1% of those 60,000 items in a year. The thing, though, is different consumers buy different things. So if you
it's not all the same 1%.
Exactly. Yeah. So you look across millions and you won't find two that buy exactly the same 1%, which is why the store needs to carry a lot of product, but also understand which consumers are looking for what and be able to give it to them at better prices, remind them of them. And that's where data and understanding your consumer comes in.
Let's talk to Raymond in Elliott, Maine. Raymond, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thank you. My wife and I were some of the people that had tried Blue Apron, and we were looking for the convenience, and we discovered that, yes, it may have helped us by not going to the grocery stores often, but the meals actually took a long time to prepare. You did get the ingredients pre-measured, but you know, all the chopping, all the measuring, putting things together took a while, and we had been looking for something that was more convenient where we could come home, throw a couple of ingredients together, and have a quickly prepared meal. So, you know, we discontinued Blue Apron and are back to doing regular grocery shopping, and I actually enjoy the social aspects of going to a grocery store.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Raymond. Really appreciate your comments. So, two things there, which is these Blue Apron things are not the equivalent of a Hungry Man microwave dinner. They do require some work. And the second thing there is the social aspect. There's a community feel to a grocery store.
Yeah. And you see that more in certain kinds of stores than others. For example, the kinds of consumers who shop at co-op food stores seem to care, from some research that I've done, seem to care about things that would not be top of our minds when we think about what people consider when they shop at stores. They care about who the other people are who are shopping in the store. They care about how wealthy or not wealthy the people in the store are. So there's that kind of social aspect, but there's also just the simple community need for interacting with people, meeting the folks you know. There is some of that. And there again, as we bring in more and more technology, we need to keep in mind what the effects are on those things.
Yeah. When anybody says the grocery store shopping experience is also a social experience, I think, boy, I hope the aisles are spacious, because people are going to stop and they're going to talk, and I'm going to be the guy in the cart saying, could you move over a little bit? I'm trying to get by here. Listeners, give us a call, especially if you have an allegiance to a particular grocery store. We want to know why. Tell us why you are so dedicated to a particular grocery store. What makes it work for you? And what do you, maybe you wish that a grocery store would do a particular thing that would win your loyalty. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We did a poll on Twitter, which we will admit right out the gate, not a scientific poll. However, we did ask our Twitter followers, what is your grocery store allegiance? 47% of responders said Market Basket. 37% said Hannaford. 6% said Shaw's. And 11% said none of these. Now, there are a lot of options in the none of these co-ops. The new Aldi, for example, people really like the new Aldi store. So we'll talk a little bit more about customer loyalty after a break. We're also going to talk about technology and the way grocery stores are changing. We touched on that a little bit, but we're going to talk about things like self-checkout. There was also a store in San Francisco where you downloaded an app and you picked stuff up and you walked right out of the store. How did it work? We're going to take a look at that as well. Stay with us and give us a call if you have a question or a comment. The number is 1-800-892-6477. You can also email exchange at nhpr.org or post on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange. I'm Peter Biello, and we'll be right back.
Joining the Leadership Circle is a vote of confidence in NHPR's mission.
Leadership Circle member Jake Voynas.
I think there's sort of an incredible importance in investing in the things that you value. And I was attracted to the opportunity to really lean in and invest in a resource that means a lot to me and many others in New Hampshire.
You too can lean in to NHPR when you invest $100 a month or make a one-time gift of $1,200 at nhpr.org/leadershipcircle.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, filling in for Laura Knoy. And right now, on this day before Thanksgiving, we're talking about grocery stores, the economics of them, our loyalty or lack thereof to them, and the future of technology that makes them run. With me in the studio are Kazum Alawadi, professor of marketing at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College, and John Dumais, president and CEO of the New Hampshire Grocers Association. Give us a call and tell us your story, particularly when it comes to either technology in grocery stores, how you like it or don't like it, or loyalty to a particular grocery store. If you are loyal to one, tell us why. If a grocery store could do something to make you loyal to them, tell us what that thing is. 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. If you're calling with a comment on loyalty, stay on the line. We're going to talk now first for a little bit with Craig Giamona about grocery store technology. He's a consumer reporter for Bloomberg News, and he's covered grocery stores and the technology inside them. Craig, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, Craig, on the national level, technology is changing at grocery stores. It's also changing here in New Hampshire. One of the most noticeable changes is self-checkout. You don't have to interact with a human being at many stores anymore. You can just scan your own groceries, bag them, pay with your card or cash, and just leave. Where do you see this technology going, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I think the promise of that was that it would help reduce labor costs and also, you know, help get people through the store quicker. I mean, you've actually seen some stores, I think, starting to move away from it just because of the how fast the technology changes. I mean, I don't think that places like Target really found that it was all that faster. I mean, in my experience, you know, half the time somebody has to come over to help you finish the process. If you have alcohol, somebody has to come over. So it seems like the focus these days is really more about delivery and, you know, ways to kind of get people to buy online, maybe pick up at the store. So there's already kind of been a pivot away from that in from what we're seeing.
And why is it good for a store to have this delivery option or the in-store pickup option? Is that sort of economical for them? Is it time-saving? Does it create a more spacious experience in the store? How does it work for the store?
It's actually very, very expensive for the stores. And, I, you know, the economics of it are really tough. And it's one of the things, you know, when Amazon bought Whole Foods, I think that got everyone's attention in the industry. It had really been an industry that for a long time was insulated from kind of the disruptions of e-commerce because, you know, there's this idea that people want to see the avocado, they want to talk to the butcher, they don't want to buy food online. Now here comes Amazon. The belief is that that's going to change. I mean, it's still very, very small piece of the pie as far as the amount of food bought online. But, you know, people increasingly demand this. I mean, they're buying, restaurant delivery is increasingly popular. And just sort of that convenience of I'm on my couch, I click and it shows up, I think is obviously pretty popular. And it's coming to grocery and it's forcing companies like Kroger and Walmart to spend a lot of money to kind of boost their digital capabilities. I mean, click and collect is a situation where you order online and then go to the store to pick it up. Walmart really wants you to do that as opposed to delivery because once you drive up to the store, maybe you'll say, oops, I forgot, whatever, walk in, and now they're sort of increasing the sales. So, I mean, they're obviously, they have a lot of real estate. They've invested in that real estate. So they're hoping for a world where you're going to order online and then go to the store and pick it up. But, you know, all this stuff is very, very expensive and has really hit the margins of these companies.
So it's hit the margins. It's expensive. And it's also a loss, a cost center in a way.
It is. I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, there's very few examples of people that have figured out how to make money doing this. You know, the so-called last mile, which is the food actually kind of going to your doorstep, it's just very expensive. I mean, even in a place like New York City where I live, Fresh Direct has been around for a long time. They are profitable, you know, they figured out how to do it. But when you think about delivering in New York City, you can roll a truck up to a block and maybe hit five or six houses. That's about as economical as it can get. You think about a more rural state like New Hampshire, it just gets more and more expensive, kind of the less dense the area is. So on the one hand, customers are demanding this service, but on the other hand, sort of penciling it out and making it work financially has been very difficult for these companies.
You mentioned Walmart. How much of Walmart's sales go to groceries? Do you know?
You know, Walmart is more than 50% grocery, so grocery is a big deal for them. And, you know, I know Aldi has just arrived in New Hampshire, and Walmart's faced a lot of pressure on the price end. You know, Walmart wants to be the cheapest option, and they've spent billions of dollars to kind of keep their prices down because they're just determined not to get beat on the low end. And for Walmart, it's grocery is key. You know, it's more than 50% of the revenue. It's the thing that gets people into the stores. You know, you see an ad for cheap eggs or cheap milk or steak, and that gets you in there, and then they're hoping that while you're there, you grab something else that's maybe a little bit higher margin. But it's really a key to the Walmart business.
And what about Amazon? I mean, they are trying to play catch up to sort of overtake Walmart. They're, as far as I know, they're slightly behind Walmart in terms of size of the company and overall sales, right? Or am I wrong about that?
Yeah, I mean, those two are really engaged in a battle for the U.S. consumer's dollar across the landscape, right? That's sort of a retail battle that's going on between two gigantic companies. You know, Amazon's been trying with grocery for a long time, you know, more than 10 years. It's really the most difficult thing to crack in delivery. I mean, batteries, toothbrushes, you know, shoes, all that stuff. We've gotten comfortable buying it online. It's easy to deliver. But for some reason, there's just an emotional piece, I think, when it comes to food, where people have been a little bit slow to adopt it. And it's made it tricky for Amazon. You know, they bought Whole Foods. That gives them about 450 kind of delivery centers. Whole Foods is still a pretty powerful brand in the grocery space, but we're still kind of, I feel like we're still kind of waiting to see exactly what Amazon has planned for Whole Foods. I mean, they've ramped up one-hour delivery in some markets, and they've done little things, but they really have not articulated their grocery strategy going forward, so it's still kind of wait and see on exactly what they're going to do. I mean, I think betting against Amazon is risky business. I mean, they've cracked a lot of cases in online, but food is kind of the one thing that has been very difficult for them to figure out.
What about those few stores piloted? I think there was one in San Francisco where you download an app, you just pick up an item and you walk out of the store and you are charged for that item without any interaction with a cashier near the door. How is that experiment working out?
You know, it's pretty early days on that. I mean, I think there's a lot of there's a novelty aspect with that, something that people are very curious about, this idea of you know, sort of the technology that enables them to say, okay, there were 10 gallons of milk in this case, and then we know that you walked into the store at this time, you walked by the case at this time, and now there's only 9, so we're going to charge you for that gallon of milk. It's tough to say. I mean, could there be a world where, you know, all the Whole Foods stores go to that technology? I mean, I got to think that they're thinking that way. I mean, my understanding is that they still have to get that dialed in, that it's still a little bit tricky when the store is crowded. You know, these are small stores for a reason, which is because that technology is sort of, if you had a packed grocery store, I mean, think about the grocery stores, the way they'll look this afternoon, just be absolute mob scene in those places. Difficult for the cameras and the sensors to know exactly who's taking what in that scenario. So it doesn't seem like they're quite ready to sort of roll that out in a broad way.
Okay. And Craig, personal question for you. How do you do your grocery shopping?
You know, New York City is a bit of an anomaly. I get some stuff delivered, you know, from various services. There's a natural food store that's about a 5-minute walk from my apartment, and then a sort of a more mainstream supermarket that's about a 10-minute walk. So I try to get myself to do the 10-minute walk because it's significantly cheaper. But if I just want to grab something when I'm coming off the subway, I do dip into that natural store, buy my produce there and things like that. So, you know, I piece it together here and there, which is, you know, atypical really of how the average American and shops for groceries.
Well, Craig, thank you very much for taking some time to chat with me today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Craig Giamona. He's consumer reporter for Bloomberg News. And we've still got Kusum Alawadi and John Dumay in the studio here. While Craig was talking, both of you were taking notes on what he was saying. Reaction, Kusum, I'll start with you on anything that he had to say, something that you found remarkable in what he said.
Yeah, sure. I have a few different things, but let me start with that self-scanning technology.
Okay.
As he said, the self-scan checkouts seem to be causing, there's still a lot of problems to be worked out there. And then the other extreme is what you brought up with the scan and go. You just, you know, just pick up your stuff and walk out of the store. That's very far from reality. Amazon actually was trying to do that in their Amazon Go stores and have backed away because they're still working through the wrinkles. But there's an in-between technology there that seems to be coming up. And that's when you walk in the store, you pick up this mobile self-scanner. And as you walk through, do your shopping, you just scan your products as you put them in your cart. And when you're leaving the store, you don't have to unpack your groceries. You just have the total on that mobile little device, and you pay and go. But the other additional thing it does is, as you're scanning while you're shopping, it's giving you spending feedback in real time. It's telling you what price you're paying for every item, what your total spending is so far. And this kind of technology actually started to work and is becoming fairly widespread in Europe. We are a little bit behind there as consumers in taking it on. Walmart tried it in some of their stores and still does it in their wholesale club, but they've backed away from it because they said consumers weren't really embracing it. But that can impact how consumers shop. When you get this feedback on how much you're spending, something we don't always keep track of, it, especially when you're not experienced with the technology, it can actually make you spend less. It can make you buy fewer items.
I'm spending a little more than I thought I wanted to. Maybe I should put this second thing back.
Exactly. You know? And that's what we found in some research we were doing.
Well, while we're on the topic, let's talk with Richard in Franklin. Richard, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just was going to make an observation. I noticed recently that Hannaford specifically has gone to a shopping app for coupons. And I found that truly an annoying process. You've got to download the app. You've got to keep track of things. They send me emails way too often. I've stopped shopping there. You know, and I literally drive by Hannaford to go to Market Basket because
even with the coupons, it's not that great. In your view,
it's not that great, and it's not that comfortable. I'm not comfortable, and they're making me uncomfortable in their store with their app, and they force you into it. The only way you're going to get the discount is you have to, if you don't process every quarter or something, I can't even figure it out. You have to do something else in the app in order to get the discount. It's not worth the hassle.
Well, Richard, let me ask you, what would make you more comfortable?
Just give me the discount when I go to the counter. You know, if you're going to give me a discount, why make me work for it?
Ah, okay.
Why does the company want to make me uncomfortable as the customer? That's the question.
Well, Richard, thanks for the comment. Really appreciate it. John, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. Coupons... They thought that was going to end a long time ago. We find that it's still as popular as ever. It is an incentive to look at new products and new items that are coming out. That's subsidized by the manufacturer of those products many times. So there is a plus to it. Unfortunately, it's not for all shoppers. And in this case, Richard, it appears that he doesn't like the technology of the app for that. And that's one of the issues that we see happening with the older generation, the younger generation more so. The younger generation, they like to have all the technology, all of the different bells and whistles to that. Those who aren't as familiar with it, it's more cumbersome, it's more work to them, so they're not as friendly with that going forward.
Kasum, have you done any research on demographic differences?
Yes, and how consumers react to these various kinds of promotions, such as coupons. Look, the ultimate thing is, if a retailer just gave the lower price away to everybody, then their already very thin margins would go down even more. So the reason they use things like coupons and special deals is there are segments of consumers. Some have more money than time, and some have more time than money. And the ones who have more time than money are willing to jump through some hoops to try and get those discounts, collect those coupons, take them to the store, look for the specials in the store. That said, though, the point that the caller made is a really important one. While you want to target your promotions to the right consumers who would not otherwise buy your product if it weren't for the deal, and not to the people who were already going to buy it on full price anyway, you don't want to make this a painful exercise for those that you're trying to invite. So I found that when a grocery store uses its loyalty program, and in this case, Hannaford, yes, is doing this app in place of a loyalty program, if they use it simply to ration out discounts and only give those discounts after you've jumped through some hoops to consumers who sign up for that program, that's a wasted exercise. It makes people mad, as we just saw. And you're not really making the best use of the information you get about people from their loyalty data to say, hey, this is the kind, this guy, this shopper likes these certain kinds of products. but doesn't buy this from our store, let's give them an offer on this. That's the kind of mining the data and then giving people relevant offers that actually make sense.
We get a note from Katie who wrote in to say, quote, I think that consumers are increasingly loyal to specific foods and go where they can get them and generally where they can get them the cheapest. Katie says, so I go to BJ's for mangoes, bacon, popcorn, Diet Coke, and beer, but still am loyal to Hannaford because they have my favorite yogurt and the best fruit, and to Market Basket because they have the best fish and all the weird things I love like bulgur and farro. And of course, depending on which store you go to and what time, you also get to see all those people you haven't seen in far too long. So that's the comment from Katie. So she's commenting a little bit on loyalty based on loyalty to products, not necessarily to a particular store. That's common, John, in your view?
It's more common now than it used to be. Back in the late 70s and 80s, it was more that you had a favorite store and you went to that store. But that changed over time as more stores came, more formats came in, more product mixes came in, that now and we're more mobile with more cars available and everything, that it's easier to go to multiple stores getting pick and choosing which products you have.
Mm-hmm. Since we were just talking about self-checkout, we did another Twitter poll. Again, not a scientific poll, just kind of a fun online poll among our Twitter followers. Take it for what you will. We asked, how do you shop? And the options were 73% reported using regular checkout, 21% use self-checkout, 3% use online delivery, and 4% use curbside pickup. So among our Twitter followers, at least, not as many people using the online delivery services or the curbside pickup as still using traditional methods of picking up groceries. But we want to talk about this a little bit with Andrew from Keene, who's called in with a comment. Andrew, what's up?
Hi. I wanted to comment about the to-go service or whatever the stores might be calling them. I know for Hannaford's, which is the system I've used, they call it to-go. And I found that while it's an okay idea in concept, I found it difficult to use, partially because I'm legally blind and use a screen reader, so I can't use some of the images that they might be trying to use to help me, but also partially because when I'm having to order everything, I have to use their online system, which may use some of their special terminology or codes, and my only way to ensure that the item I'm getting is what I actually want is their little suggestion box they put with each item to say, oh, I don't want a dented, or I don't want this or that, and I have to physically type in, I want to make sure I have this specific type of salsa that I like, because I'm not quite sure of the code they use. It also, and I understand this from a general perspective, you also have to pay $5 just to walk in the store if you use it. I sort of understand the concept of that because you're having to pay for the guy's time to go and look for it, but it's also not so handy when you're having to shop on food stamps.
Huh. So, Andrew, thank you very much for your perspective. Yeah, so maybe this gets to why it can be such a complicated endeavor, as Craig was mentioning earlier in the program. Which is that there are a lot of specific needs that people need to have met, but perhaps it's too difficult for these systems to meet those needs.
And it's costly, as Craig said. Delivery, these kinds of services, which more and more we as consumers are expecting not to pay a lot for, are very, very difficult for grocery retailers to fulfill. They already operate on extremely thin margins. And so having somebody to pull off all of these things together for a consumer is, you make the consumer happy, which is a big thing. It's very, very important. But there's a double whammy on the cost side. On one side, you're going to have to incur those labor costs to get that work done. On the other, the consumer is not roaming around the store and doing the kind of impulse shopping they would otherwise do and buy more products from you. They tend to stick more to their shopping lists and what they plan to buy rather than walk around and say, I didn't realize this is good. Let me try this today. And so both of those things start to hurt revenue on one side and costs on the other.
Mm-hmm. What about the idea of store loyalty? Because some people are super loyal to stores. And I think one example of this was that they recently opened an Aldi in Concord. And I'd never been to an Aldi. I still haven't been. I'd like to check it out. But anyway, while I was reading the article about this, the comments on Facebook about it were so passionate one way or the other. And one of the things about Aldi, I guess, is that you paid a quarter deposit for the shopping cart, which saves them time because to get your quarter back, you have to put that shopping cart back where you found it. And some people love this concept. Some people think it's great, helps save the store money. And some people are like, I can't believe you're making me put my cart back. Like, what is this? And that's the kind of thing that in other stores for other reasons makes people really passionate about their grocery store. I was hoping both of you could comment, maybe start with you, John, about the passion that some grocery stores inspire in people. And where is that passion coming from?
I think it's coming from their own experiences, but also they're seeing how the store is operating and how it's treating its employees as well as their customers. And, of course, the best example of that was Market Basket a few years ago, where the company, it was disclosed how much they were backing their employees, and then when they got in trouble, how the employees were backing the store. The loyalty is there if the ownership of the store is really working to make that happen. There was a report that came out recently that Cumberland Farm Convenience Stores was one of the best companies in the convenience store industry in the United States to be working in. Well, that's a signature that the management is looking at that and trying to do the right thing for that type of store. Mm-hmm. And we see that in Hannaford. We see that in Shaw's. We see it in all of the major stores. But we also see in a lot of small independents. We see where we have independents who are giving special recognition to their employees. Single store operators are saying, who's our employee of the month type of program. Any of those things will do that. And then that relates back to the consumers who look at that and say, boy, that's the way I'd want to treat my employees if I had employees. And so that's where I want to support that store.
Listeners, we're talking about grocery stores today. We're just getting started on our loyalty discussion, but we have to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk more about consumer loyalty. We'll talk about co-ops, the economics of grocery stores, grocery store tourism, and a variety of other things having to do with how you shop, where you shop, why you shop, especially on this day before Thanksgiving. If you have comments, give us a call. The number is 1-800-892-6477. Tell us your grocery store story. 1-800-892-NHPR or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello, filling in for Laura Kanoi today. We will be right back. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and we're speaking with our guests today about grocery stores. As you make your last-minute list and head out into the pre-Thanksgiving crowds, how do you feel about the store that supplies you with your food? And is there a better way to do it than the way most of us do it now? Call us 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. With us in the studio, John Dumais, President and CEO of the New Hampshire Grocers Association, and Kusum Alawadi, Professor of Marketing at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College. Again, the phone number for you to call, 1-800-892-6477. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about consumer loyalty to a particular store. And for this part of the conversation, I want to bring in Susan and Meredith. Susan, thanks very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I grew up as an Italian-American in New York and went to lots of little stores with my mother every day. Here in the Upper Valley, living in Meriden, I am a very loyal co-op shopper. I'm very interested in local food and the local economy, and that's why I shop at the co-op.
Okay, so a huge fan of the co-op there. Thanks very much from Meriden, not Meredith, as I had identified. So co-ops in particular, they do inspire some loyalty, and in some cases they sell memberships, which I guess really increases the shopper's stake in the particular grocery store. John?
Co-ops are a unique retail food store, very specialized. We've seen some great ones. We have at least four or five in the state that are doing very well, are members of ours. The one in Keene, the Monadnock Co-op, is a good example where they actually take the their members out to the farms to meet the farmers of the products that they're going to be bringing in the store.
That's really highlight that in the commitment store. If you want to go and do that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a field trip on a weekend to go do that, but you then have more loyalty that I know I can get that farmer's product at that store. Hanover Co-op has done that in several of their locations. They're doing a great job. Concord Co-op keeps expanding what they do. So the loyalty factor is that it becomes a community within a community, and they have the products that those consumers want and mm-hmm. want to take the time to be in the store with.
One of the things about co-ops that widely acknowledged that they're more expensive, at least for some products there. It's not cheap to buy food that is sustainably grown at times. And that said, some people really want to do it anyway. And Kasum, you've done some research on why people choose this. And one element of it, it's not a whole thing, but part of it is conspicuous consumption, right? People like to show other people that they are shopping at the co-op.
Yes, and that was certainly one part of several other things that drove people's loyalty to stores like that. One of the things, the main purpose of the study that where we found that was to understand whether the kinds of sort of social responsibility initiatives that retailers do, such as the co-op, whether that really counts for any loyalty in the minds of the consumers. And what we found was, amongst various things, if we studied the impact of how environmentally friendly the retailer is, how much they support the community with charitable giving and so on, how much they put effort into getting locally sourced products, and how fair they are to their employees, those were four things we studied. Mm. What we found was that there was certainly about a third of the group of people we studied cared about all of those things. Mm. And they shopped at the store because it did those things. Mm-hmm. But for a good two-thirds or more of the sample of people, we found that the only two things amongst those four that mattered were whether they had local products and whether they were fair to the employees, things that directly impacted what they bought and how they interacted in the store were really important. And for that two-thirds of the sample that we studied, price was important. In fact, if you had a lot of unique products, a smaller set of people think, yes, that's the place to go. I love it. I'm going to shop there. But for a large segment of people, even if the overall prices of the store are not expensive, the fact that there are these unique items that you can't find anywhere else gives them the perception that the store must be more expensive. Mm-hmm. And that's an important distinction. And that's something that co-op stores have to struggle with, the reality of higher prices versus the perception of perhaps higher prices than they really are.
Right. Some things at the co-op I have found are actually much cheaper, especially, right. I mean, if you try to buy a McCormick jar of spices at Hannaford's, like it's $4 or something like that. But then you can just buy a quarter's worth of whatever you need in the bulk section at a co-op, and that's actually quite helpful. We've got some comments from Twitter. I want to bring in comments from Allegra and Tracy. They both say they love Wegmans, the Wegmans grocery store. There's a bunch in Massachusetts, none in New Hampshire, as far as I know. John, you're shaking your head. Okay, so no Wegmans in New Hampshire, although Allegra and Tracy kind of wish there were. I assume they do anyway. Marcus on Twitter voted for Market Basket in our unscientific poll. He says, but I have been going to the Aldi in Concord the past few weeks. He says it has been significantly more cost effective. Thank you very much for your comment, Marcus. Really appreciate that. And Worksong Farm on Facebook wanted to give a shout out to farmers markets. Many markets like the Kentucook Farmers Market are open year round. Also, many markets offer SNAP programs for those in need of assistance. So, John, where do you see farmers markets fitting into the grocery store landscape here in New Hampshire?
Very much so. They're definitely a part of the process. It gets the consumer more aware of local produce and something that we are always promoting, trying to do have local produce as much as possible going forward.
And let's talk to Gloria in Holderness. Gloria, what's your question or comment?
Well, I cannot talk about loyalty because we have exactly one market in our area. But at that market, we have an excellent bank and we have an excellent pharmacy, which is attracting to that store in case another one comes to town. And then I'd like to list some complaints that maybe another store would not do, and that is with Hennepin's, which is the one store we have, change the items locations constantly.
They constantly change where things are, and
yes,
and that
very, very frustrating.
Makes it hard for you to find stuff?
Yes, and then they'll drop items out of the blue, something you've been purchasing for quite a few years. And then for the elderly, coping with the bottom shelf is just very difficult, and coping with the top shelf. You have a couple of cans of coffee lined up, and you try to get one, you know what's going to happen. And then packaging is, we try to get small quantities. Instead of 6 or 8 chicken thighs, a packaging for one person would be a great advantage to keep people coming to your store.
Gloria, thank you very much. And some of those comments don't apply just to the elderly. I'm thinking of my girlfriend who is 5'1 and has to either find a tall person or use one item from the grocery store to knock another item from the grocery store off the shelf and into reaching distance. But anyway, John, are these familiar comments?
They're very familiar. And there's certainly a lot of validity to what she's talking about. As far as dropping items, we've always said that when the consumer goes to the store, they're voting every time about those 6,000 items that are in the store, which ones will be there next week. Because if you're not buying it, then they're doing away. I would suggest in that case that probably talk to the store manager and say, I really like this product. Is there a way of bringing it back? And I'm sure they can accommodate her, even in a large supermarket like that, do that. Smaller independents will more really look at that as well.
Oh, so she could, in theory, go to someone at the store and...
Absolutely.
Not just say it on the radio, right? But go to the people in town and say this, and you're nodding too.
That's absolutely right. And that's the best way to get a retailer to understand that there is truly a loyal consumer. Look, there's a difference between being loyal to a product or even a store and just being in the habit of buying it all the time, because that's just what you do and you don't think about it. When someone's so loyal to a brand or a particular store that they go out of their way for it, it's important for the retailer to know that, because then they'll know that if we don't put this item back, we're going to lose not just this consumer buying this product, but their entire shopping basket.
Okay. So
the other thing that they talked about was the stuff on the bottom shelf, top shelf. Certainly, if you have any kind of health issues or conditions that don't want you doing that, that just talk to the store. They'll have a clerk go with you to help you with the shopping.
Don't climb the shelves.
Exactly. It's not easy.
Not a good idea. John, what is the New Hampshire landscape like when it comes to ethnicity-based grocery stores? I mean, we see them in some of the bigger cities and towns. Is this a significant part of the options available to New Hampshire grocery shoppers?
It certainly is. And again, this goes back to the 1900s. The immigrants come into the area. They're in a community where their population doesn't speak the language, the English language, or understand the customs. And so they're needed. In Manchester, I think there's like 49 different dialects now in Manchester area. And you see a proliferation in the neighborhood stores of a lot of these ethnic food stores with the products that they want. Some of the larger supermarkets are doing the same thing of having, as we talked earlier about Market Basket and some others, Hannaford and others, who are actually having departments for the community needs, those of the of that whole community. Mm-hmm. So there is a definite need for that going forward.
Okay. Let's take a call from Jordan in Plymouth. Jordan, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question, which has to do with sort of the base consumer experience along with self-scanners and shopping carts, is what is the current state of approach to plastic bags in New Hampshire, I guess, and beyond? And I guess as a follow-up to that, what are stores doing to change that or not to change that?
John, what do you think? Plastic bags.
It's something that we've been looking at for some time. We've been working we look at the demographics of a lot of that. And of course, the old brown paper bag was the packaging of choice for a long time. But we found that to be very expensive and also not as recyclable as other products and very costly because of the weight to get it there. The plastic bags came through, and You can have one case of plastic bags take a whole truckload of brown paper bags to a store. So the transportation costs, that increase the store costs, which means it increase your food costs. So the plastic bags are the more appropriate one. They have a secondary reuse after that. A lot of good benefits to that, but there is an environmental concern with that. So we're looking to have biodegradable bags in place, getting proper disposal. Certainly can bring those back to the store after the use, and we'll dispose of them for them.
I remember when I lived in Vermont, I think it was Price Chopper, who if you brought in your own bag from home, they would credit you 3 cents per bag on your bill. Is that something anybody in New Hampshire does?
I'm not sure if anyone's doing that in particular. I know a lot of them are doing cardboard boxes from the shipping crates,
right.
Having those available.
Market Basket
to use
does
those.
That, yeah.
Hannaford was doing that for quite a while. I don't know if they're doing it now. 5 cents off for using a cloth bag. And, of course, they sell their own cloth bags, too.
Yes.
Which you can buy. So.
Really quickly, because we're coming up towards the end of the show, but I wanted to ask about the way New Hampshire factors its liquor into the grocery store experience, because you can't get liquor in New Hampshire grocery stores. I was surprised when I moved to Maine for college from Massachusetts, where you can't have liquor in grocery stores either. You go into a Hannaford there, they have everything. Here, not so much. Any insight into how New Hampshire consumers feel about having to go to one store for their food and another store for their hard liquor?
We find that the majority of consumers today would like to have one-stop shopping. It really is difficult for them to do two locations. In fact, we see a lot of the state liquor stores that sell the liquor, the spirit part of it, putting their stores adjacent to a grocery store. But you're still putting it in, going in one store, then having to do another trip into another store.
Two lines to contend with, possibly.
Majority of the country is going that way to have it all in one location.
Have you done any research on that?
No, I'll pass on that one.
All right. Well, thank you for not passing on so many of these other questions. Your insight's been incredible. Thank you very much, really, for being here. Kasum Alawadi, Professor of Marketing at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College, and John Dumais, President and CEO of the New Hampshire Grocers Association. Thanks to both of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank
Great
you very much
here.
For having us.
That's it for today. But remember, the conversation continues online on Facebook and at nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. May you find everything you are looking for on your grocery list with minimal lines and minimal hassle on this day before Thanksgiving. We hope you have a great one. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.